Hello, I'm Hashi Mohammed, contributing editor at Tortoise. Welcome to the Clusters Playbook podcast, hosted by the CBI in partnership with Virgin Media O2 Business. We are hosting a series of think-ins, live, unscripted discussions featuring a range of experts across the country on the theme of clusters, areas of concentrated economic activity that can help drive innovation and development. After each think-in, we'll produce a podcast outlining and elaborating on the key takeaways of each discussion. Over the course of this series, we'll be talking about the role clusters can play in boosting the British economy, how businesses and other stakeholders can help, and what we need to do to take the UK's current economic clusters from good to great. We'll touch on the role of skills, innovation, access to finance, international competitiveness, and of course, leadership. Today we are in Cheltenham, discussing how we can develop the right skills for regional and national growth. I'm joined by Martin McFadgen, Head of the Public Sector, Virgin Media O2 Business. Martin, thank you very much for joining us. We've just had this think-in session and there was a great deal of discussion around the right skills and how the right skills will help us navigate this period of growth and also respond to the levelling up agenda. What has been your reflection of what you have just heard from so many industry leaders right here in Cheltenham?
Thank you, Hashi. And I suppose my immediate reflection is one of the recognising the importance of good storytelling and strong leadership as part of a cluster's identity or as regional identity. And someone doesn't necessarily need to be a person. It can be an organisation or a collection of people who share a common vision to drive the economic development and growth of a region to make it a place where people want to live, want to work, and want to play. And if the shared vision and shared purpose is one that multiple agencies, whether that be from public or private sector, or indeed from academia, buy into and support that vision, then there is a shared goal to drive successful outcomes. And where that collaboration is successful, good things will happen.
And that collaboration was something that was sort of discussed in a great way through individuals who were working, for example, with universities and businesses. So just tell me a bit about your thoughts on how critical it is to have that collaboration between academia, between businesses, between schools, between apprenticeship programs, and how that is really critical to the Levelling Up agenda and the clusters programs.
Yeah, the connection and the linkage between education, whether that be from early careers education through to higher and further education, we have to recognise that that is the conveyor belt of future employees for the organisations in that region. So if the organisations are not sharing the ambitions that they have with those educational establishments and demonstrating to them why that's a good place to come and work, that can provide a fantastic opportunity for those individuals to have thriving careers and excellent lives, then there's a missed opportunity in terms of the talent pool, and we won't achieve the vision that will have been painted by those successful leaders to drive forward in terms of that economic development. And it's important that the educational establishments, regardless of what level, also recognise their place in being relevant to that local employment market as well, because you want to be able to retain skilled workforce, regardless of what that skill is, in your local area, to ensure that you are maintaining a thriving community. And by maintaining a thriving community, then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that people want to continue to live there, continue to work there, and then that will have a generational change for years to come as part of that. So the linkage cannot be underestimated of how important it is.
And what would you say, as part of the discussions that we've just had, what would be the one thing that you've heard today during this thinking that perhaps has given you a different perspective, or as part of the session is something that you can take away from the discussion?
I think that the really insightful value that Adrian from Princess Yachts gave around how they have gone to the local education marketplace with a problem statement to say, we need your help. Carpentry is a skill that's in short supply for us, and our industry, our organisation, is wholly dependent on that skill being available. And that education establishment able to put courses on to be able to bring that supply chain of skilled resource into the organisation and demonstrate joined up thinking for the greater good of that whole community. If that can be replicated in other industries and other parts of the country, that's a way to go.
We were here to discuss the role of skills, and everybody agrees and there is a consensus that skills are important. But what would you say are the sort of main challenges of ensuring that clusters and regions have the skills that they need for the future, not just for now?
Some of the challenges will be about identifying what those skills are. So are we clear on what the skills required for that cluster, for that region are today? Hopefully. Tomorrow? Possibly. 6 months, 6 years out, can we be as accurate as predicting what those skills requirements are? I think that's where we get some of the challenges as part of it, and being able to keep pace. And the gentleman from Bath University talked about the value of education and how the lifeblood of that education is for so long. And then it can become outdated. And is the teachings of the educational establishments today going to be relevant for the future jobs in 4, 6, 10 years' time? Or are we able to predict that? And are there a core set of skills, without being too specific about them, that actually are more important to the future employment base and being able to have that adaptability to be able to flex as the inevitable change happens and make sure that they are able to stay relevant because they possess the inherent skill of being able to learn, being able to adapt, being able to apply that and not expect instant success overnight as part of that program. So I think the real thing for me is articulating the challenge, articulating the message, and then having the joined up thinking to make sure that that supply chain is there whilst also recognising that constant change is inevitable.
And thinking about your core area within Virgin Media O2 Business, how do you see the sort of digital inclusion fit into the skills topic, and why is that important?
The digital inclusion is critically important to the supply of skills. I often joke about Billy Connolly's sketch when he talks about there could be a fantastic Olympic gold medalist pole vaulter living in the high-rise flats of Glasgow, but we'll never know because he never got the opportunity to go and try it out. So how many future, fantastic, digitally skilled people are there that aren't going to get that opportunity because they are digitally excluded and they're from that background that doesn't provide them with that opportunity to be able to kind of fulfill their potential and potential of kind of revolutionising future organisations and future industries as part of that. So making sure that nobody is left behind and everybody has a base level, but equally everybody has the opportunity to succeed through that.
And as part of your work, obviously you are trying to address this digital exclusion aspect of things, and increasingly you're looking to deliver skills and resources that deal with that issue out there. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so some of that's helped through the kind of government adoption of social value in procurement. So that encourages private sector organisations bidding on contracts to demonstrate that they are delivering value through the contract beyond the services being procured by the organisation. And we've done a fantastic job, particularly in Greater Manchester, I would say, as the kind of shining light for our social value contribution through what was the largest government-funded full fibre programme. And in that case alone, within the first 12 months of the contract being signed, we delivered back £12 million worth of economic value into the region. We also created a number of apprenticeship roles. We supported, obviously, through the COVID pandemic, being able to get devices and laptops to underprivileged children who would have been digitally excluded, and supporting that, as well as countless hours of volunteering time to support a number of initiatives, including Care Leavers Initiative and also a social housing initiative that we're currently working on with them as well. So that's a big, big focus for us. And kind of Manchester encapsulates a number of work streams, but there are similar use cases across the country where we've been doing similar examples of some, if not all, of those things.
And as a major supplier of digital goods and services to the corporate sector, what would you say is your assessment of the digital literacy and skills of UK PLC, for example?
Varied, depending on the sector. So if we were to look at SMEs, for example, we typically see an under-resource, under-utilisation of digital and an under-representation of digital skills and digital adoption within those smaller organisations. The larger organisations are, as we heard about today, focused a lot around digital transformation and how they can digitise processes and systems to streamline their organisation and make it more efficient, make it more customer-friendly in there. And there is a mixed bag of skills. Some organisations do that incredibly well, and we can think about all the digital engagement that we would have with an organisation like an Amazon, for instance, in that digital journey and digital adoption. And that becomes a de facto standard that people then judge all other digital engagements by. And is that a fair benchmark to set, or do we have to recognise that different organisations are at different stages of that journey? And there is an enforcement over the last couple of years for that adoption to be even faster as a result of COVID. And one of the challenges that we see across both corporate and public sector is actually legacy IT being some of the barrier to that adoption. And how do you balance the challenges of future technology capability being built on a foundation of legacy IT equipment and balance the books on the budget, which is under ever more challenging constraints, and a resource factor that people are in short supply, as we've talked about today, in the skills shortage, and public sector organisations losing skilled resource to private sector, and that kind of merry-go-round of people moving around the employment market. So I think that would probably be my reflection on that one.
And thinking about that and business performance, if you think some of them having some sort of legacy IT equipment or a lack of understanding in terms of how the digital world or digital skills work, presumably that then bleeds into either poor performance or suboptimal performance of a business, and therefore a cluster might be affected in that way too, surely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We would like to think that the availability of the data and the information that informs us about how we want to make decisions on the future strategy or plan of the organisation is all well-formed and well-founded out of the systems that supply that data and information to us. If that information is not there because of the legacy IT or the infrastructure is not quite capable of supporting that intelligence gathering, or the skills don't exist to interpret that data once it is gathered, then how can strategy and plan be built with the lack of either of those things?
Well, today we're in Cheltenham, which is the sort of southwest region of the CBI, and we're here discussing clusters and skills. Tell me a little bit about the kind of regions and sectors that you are working with at the moment in terms of just feeding into this agenda of digital skills and ways of improving people's connectivity and digital inclusion.
So we're doing a lot of work. Obviously, as the head of public sector, I'll talk to the public sector areas first. We're doing a lot of work with local authorities, who typically are the ones who get given the expectation that it's their responsibility to address the local area and what services are available to their citizens, whether it's being provided by them or through them. So a significant amount of work with local authorities to drive availability of infrastructure and make sure that everyone has access to affordable services through our organisation. And equally then, that transverses across to the health and social care. So working closely with the NHS as well to ensure that the adoption and the uptake of their digital services and electronic patient records and all the good streamlining that will drive efficiencies in the NHS. That's a big part of our work, as well as understanding how digital and connectivity can support the justice sector with the police forces and the fire service as well, through the good work that we're doing there. And then kind of recognising some of the clusters and the importance of them, our enterprise business is also doing a lot of work around professional services, organisations, as we look into the likes of legal firms and architects and the kind of traditional professional services you would expect, as well as tourism and hospitality. And that's a big growth area for us as well. We do a significant amount of work with a number of large organisations in that sector, and recognising that that is a big fabric of the UK economy in terms of tourism and hospitality, then that's something that we would see as kind of continuing to play an important role in growing our organisation. And then the last one I would say as part of that would be retail. Obviously, through COVID and the pandemic, we've seen a lot of move to online and digital. And now we're also working with organisations to understand combining our expertise with the retailers, with the local authorities, and bringing it all together. How can we reimagine the high street? How can we get traders back operating and footfall back in the high street to drive thriving local communities as part of it? So bringing those three elements together provide a great platform to kind of demonstrate the value of public and private sector working together and being able to be the kind of linchpin that can kind of connect the two.
Thank you very much, Martin, for sharing with us all that important work that you're doing.
Thank you very much for having me.
For our next Thinkin, we'll be going to Martin's hometown of Glasgow, where we'll be discussing innovation in relation to cluster development. For more information on the CBI's cluster's work, including Thinkin write-ups, case studies, and the latest live learnings from their live learning demonstrator in Humber, please visit their digital platform at www.cbi.org.uk/CBI-clusters-playbook.